Today, we tell an incredible story of survival, the tale of William Rankin, a new story on this week's episode of The Internet Says It's True. Hey there, and welcome to The Internet Says It's True, where every week we learn something that sounds made up but is really true, part of the WCVE podcast experience. My name is Michael Kent. This is episode 183. Thank you so much again for tuning in, and thanks for hanging in there with me while we do some rewind episodes the last couple of weeks. This is a new episode. I have a feeling we may do a few more rewind episodes coming forward. If you are on Patreon, you know why. And the rest of you, it'll just have to be a mystery until afterward. I want to send a special welcome to new Tizzeter, Bill. Thank you so much, Bill, for joining up. If you want to join Bill and the others who have become Tizzeters, just head over to patreon.com/MichaelKent. Pledge any amount you'd like. When you do that, you get access to cool stuff. Again, patreon.com/MichaelKent. Become a Tizzeter today.
I am once again asking for your financial support.
Also, be sure to send in a rating and review of the podcast. I always appreciate when you do that. You can do that on the Purple Podcast app. That's the iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called these days. But that seems to be the only one that really makes a difference. Go on there, give us 5 stars, and then, you know, put a few words about what episode you liked, what you didn't like, whatever. But that definitely helps out. So with all of the housekeeping out of the way, let's tell the story of William Rankin.
Get on with it.
Yes, get on with it.
We've told some incredible stories of survival on this show. The story of Juliana Kepke was the one that comes to mind. That was the teenager who fell from the sky and lived a couple weeks in the jungles of Peru. This is a somewhat similar story in that it's about a man who fell from the sky. Let's meet Lieutenant Colonel William Rankin. William Henry Rankin was born in 1920. He joined the military after school and fought in World War II and the Korean War as a Marine pilot. By the 1950s, he had reached the rank of Lieutenant Colonel and was flying F-8U Crusaders off of aircraft carriers during the Cold War effort as the commander of VMF 122, which is a Marine Fighter Attack Squadron. His home base was in Beaufort, South Carolina, and Rankin, along with Lieutenant Herbert Nolan, were traveling from Naval Air Station South Weymouth, Massachusetts, back to their base in Beaufort, South Carolina. They were flying their 2 F-8U Crusaders and were somewhere over Virginia when disaster struck. If you're unfamiliar with the F-8U aircraft, this is a supersonic single-engine jet aircraft designed to operate from aircraft carriers. It was developed in 1952 and had a relatively short production life. The last one was manufactured in 1964. It's often referred to as the last of the gunfighters, because as aircraft were being designed with their primary weapons as missiles and bombs, the F-8U's primary weapon was the 20mm cannon, which is a huge round. Not as big as the A-10 Thunderbolt's 30mm rounds, but they wanted this aircraft to have something larger than the 50 caliber guns that had proven insufficient during the Korean War. It was also a super fast aircraft. It was the first American jet fighter to reach 1,000 miles per hour. It had a variable incidence wing, which is a system to change the angle of the wings. And that's different than sweep wings. This is the angle. It also had the ability to fold the wings up at the end, which helped to make more space on board the carriers. It was equipped with a ram air turbine, which was a common backup system. Basically, if the engine stopped while the aircraft was in motion in the air, the ram air turbine could use incoming air to restart the engine and the electrical systems. This will be important to remember in William Rankin's case. The F-8U had a ceiling of about 52,000 feet and was often used for reconnaissance and spy missions. It was a difficult plane to fly, and the technology was fairly new. In 1959 alone, 32 F-8U Crusaders crashed. Now, fortunately, only 3 of those crashes ended in pilot fatalities, but it was July 26th, and 14 of these crashes had already occurred. For Rankin, this was just a flight home to South Carolina from Massachusetts. He and his flight partner were flying under the call sign Tiger II and were expecting the trip to take around 70 minutes to span the 800 miles. It was a pretty routine flight, and the two were just wearing light summer flight suits. As they were in the area over Norfolk, Virginia, they approached a huge thunderstorm, with thunderclouds extending up to 44,000 feet. To avoid the storm, the pair ascended to 48,000 feet, and that's when Lieutenant Colonel Rankin heard a thump and then grinding noises coming from the jet's single engine. Then another thump and a warning light in the cockpit before he heard the engine seize up and cut out completely. As I mentioned earlier, there is a fail-safe in place for this type of emergency. But as Rankin pulled the lever to deploy the backup Ram air turbine system, the lever broke off in his hand. He had run out of options at 47,000 feet and still traveling hundreds of miles per hour. He pulled the lever to eject from the aircraft. It was around 6 p.m. in the evening. When Lieutenant Herbert Nolan looked out the window of his jet, he saw Lieutenant Colonel Rankin spinning wildly with all his limbs outstretched before he disappeared into the thunderstorm below. We'll tell the rest of the story after a quick break. There was a time that humans used 100% organic products as healing balms and moisturizers for their skin. Well, I've partnered with an awesome company that wants to get back to those times. Fatco sells organic and responsibly made tallow-based skincare products. For centuries, humans used tallow in skin moisturizers and healing balms, but unfortunately, the topical application of these fats seemed to stop around the same time that animal fats stopped being considered part of a healthy diet. A lot of modern skincare products do more harm than good by stripping your skin of its natural oils. Let's change that. You can try them out now at fatco.com and get 15% off your order by using my promo code INTERNET. Go to theinternetsaysitstrue.com/deals for the link.
I'm John DeSando, host of Back Talk. This podcast is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time. Back Talk features additional content and banter with guests about new movies. If you want more insight and information about what's playing now in theaters and online, find Back Talk at the WCBE Podcast Experience on wcbe.org. You'll be happy you did.
If you love listening to this podcast every week and you want to show your support, that would mean a great deal to me. You can do that by becoming a Patreon member. We've got members at all levels, whether you want to pledge $1 a month or $10 a month. Just think about the value that you receive from this show. And if you like the histories and the stories that you learn about or the jokes that you hear, and if you think that they're worth it, consider signing up. For that, you get every episode ad-free and a week early, access to bonuses like the unedited videos of the guest appearances, and 20% off all merchandise. You can sign up today at patreon.com/Michael Kent. That's patreon.com/Michael Kent. Ejecting from a jet fighter is never routine, but through the years, engineers have developed all kinds of ways to make it survivable. In the case of the F-8U-1, the early variant that Lieutenant Colonel William Rankin was flying, it was equipped with a Vought ejection seat. When he pulled the ejection lever at 6 p.m. on July 26, 1959, the seat operated as expected, but that wasn't the problem. The problem was that he was at 47,000 feet. Humans don't have enough oxygen to breathe above 26,000 feet, and the ambient static pressure is only about 13% of the air pressure that we experience on ground level. To put it simply, it's basically unsurvivable to remain at that altitude wearing nothing but a thin flight suit and no pressure suit. Rankin was falling quickly and was instantly hit with rapid onset frostbite to his extremities. His abdomen swelled several times its normal size, and he began bleeding from his eyes, ears, nose, and mouth. The temperature change that William Rankin experienced was going from 75 degrees Fahrenheit inside the cockpit to an instant minus 70 degrees Fahrenheit in the sky. The spin that he fell into pulled his limbs outward, and the centrifugal force from spinning was too strong to even move his arms or legs. His oxygen mask had been knocked free from his face, so his first order of business was trying to get that back to his mouth and nose to breathe from his bailout oxygen tank. He fell into the storm cloud below, and his spinning slowed down enough to reach the oxygen mask, which was the only thing that kept him from experiencing brain death from lack of oxygen. He was free falling into the violent storm, but still alive. The next test would be for him to deploy his parachute. The chute deployment worked on barometric pressure and would automatically deploy when Rankin hit 10,000 feet. But he was in a giant cumulonimbus cloud. The barometric pressure was all messed up, so at somewhere between 15 and 20,000 feet, the parachute deployed prematurely. It was good that the chute expanded above him and slowed his descent, but the fact that he was still so high in the air meant that he was subject to the violent storm conditions and winds inside this cloud. And the movement was violent. Instead of falling, the parachute suddenly carried him upward thousands of feet. Rankin's body had been through so much already, and now he found himself vomiting from all the trauma. He was being violently pelted by baseball-sized hailstones at one point, and at another, the rain was so thick he found himself needing to hold his breath just in order to keep from drowning. Lightning began surrounding him. The bolts appeared as bright blue columns of light several feet in diameter. The accompanying thunder shook his body to the core. One lightning bolt was so close, he thought he had been struck and had died. Finally, Rankin could see the dark ground approaching below him and landed in the forest in North Carolina. He didn't know it yet, but he had landed in Ahoskie, North Carolina, more than 65 miles from Norfolk, Virginia, where he had bailed out. His aircraft crashed in Scotland Neck, North Carolina, 30 miles from where he landed. Bruised, badly frostbitten, and covered in welts from the hail, Lieutenant Colonel Rankin looked at his watch. It was 6:40 p.m. In clear conditions, he would have landed somewhere around 5 minutes after he ejected. Rankin had been falling for 40. William Rankin made a full recovery from his harrowing ordeal and went on to continue to have a successful aviation career. He died in 2009 at the age of 89. His story was written in an autobiography he penned in 1960 called The Man Who Rode the Thunder. To this day, he's only one of two people to survive falling through a cumulonimbus thundercloud. The internet says it's true. It's time for Yap Yap with me and a friend. Today I'm calling comedian Lisa Berry. Lisa's a comedian, a performer, and a sketch writer. Her sketches have appeared on BuzzFeed, Hoo Ha Ha, and Funny or Die. You know that one. She's also one of the founding producers of C-Bus Comedy, which is a group that puts on live comedy shows in Central Ohio. She is the host of the Stay Pumped, a Vanderpump Rules Watch Party podcast. How's the podcast going, by the way?
It's good. It's a lot of fun. I'm doing it with my brother, and you know, I've been a Vanderpump Rules fan since the beginning. And my brother, I'm introducing it to him one episode at a time, and it's kind of fun going on that journey with him.
It's exciting. It's exciting. Good to have you back on. It's been a while since we had you, I know that a new season of Vanderpump just came out, and so I'm sure that's caused all kinds of excitement on the podcast.
Yes, it has. I will say I'm a little bit disappointed so far in the season. Last season, you know, Vanderpump Rules was a real high. It was a great season. I'm struggling a little bit this season.
Is that right?
To keep it going. Yeah,
that's amazing.
So still worth
I'm
watching.
I'm so uninformed on the whole thing. I've not watched a single minute of the show. All I know is that it's like a reality show about a bunch of awful people that work in a restaurant. That's all of my knowledge.
They're all the worst people. I think the biggest mistake anybody makes when they try and watch the show is that they try to get behind one person as if that's the good person. I'm going to champion this person. And then an episode later, they have to go, oh, no, turns out that person's also really awful.
That's funny. We may have been talking about this last time you were on because I've been watching it for so long, but we restarted Grey's Anatomy from the beginning. And,
oh, wow.
Which is...
That's like 20 seasons, right?
20 seasons. We're on season 11. It for, you know, a few months of, you know, we'll watch maybe two episodes a night, you know. And it's great because it lets me know that I still have emotions because it knocks me out every damn episode. But regarding what you were saying is like... I was pretty clearly against certain characters on the show. Like, I hate this guy. This guy's awful. And then they'll do like one episode that makes him like out to be a nice guy. And now I have this decision to make as to like, you know, do I like this person? Do I hate this person? And it's great because it's early. It's before we normalized the idea of creating drama series with really, really awful characters as the protagonist. Which is what series now do.
I feel like that is a big thing. I mean, which is kind of interesting, but I do feel like it's all of them. We're only watching shows about terrible people. I feel like, you know, my husband and I have been watching White Lotus, and that's pretty much all White Lotus is.
Is
just
that right?
A bunch of terrible people. Yeah, I don't know if
haven't
you've seen
watched
it,
that one at all yet. I've heard it's amazing.
So it's really good, but yeah, it's just all terrible people. And I feel like all of the prestige dramas now, it's all, you just have to watch these terrible people. And I think part of the point is how far will you follow along with them before you I also sometimes think the point is like, how far along will you watch them before you kind of don't care anymore? Like, how far can we push your ability to recognize them as terrible people, which isn't always what I want to see when I'm watching TV. I
really don't remember this ever being a big thing before Breaking Bad. I feel like Breaking Bad was the first one that I watched and I was like, I know I'm supposed to hate this guy, but he's the guy that he's the main character of the show. He's the protagonist. And you're on his side because there are worse people than him on the show.
Yes. Yeah.
And
same thing with his wife, right? Yeah. I feel like maybe The Sopranos started it.
Maybe. Yeah, oh, absolutely. The Sopranos was before long before Breaking Bad. And it was the same deal, right? Like there wasn't a single redeemable person really in The Sopranos.
But you found yourself, maybe, but for the most part, no. I mean, they all kind of did pretty terrible things.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the one guy's girlfriend, the young guy. Oh God, I know it's been a while since I rewatched.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah,
but his girlfriend was like, I feel like she was a genuinely good person. I don't know. Anyway, it's a fun trend to see. Reality. I guess maybe it set up the idea of Jersey Shore and Vanderpump and this idea of the main characters just all being awful, but we still watch and. All of the housewives and
I think the problem is, so I think if you watch all of the reality TV shows with what the first time, you know, the mindset that I have is that they're all terrible people, pretty much all reality shows, or, you know, I'll watch Love is Blind and I am always rooting for them not to get married because they should absolutely not get married. The problem is when people watch reality TV and maybe do empathize with, or not empathize, you can empathize with whoever, but identify, right. You're identifying with these people. I feel like that's when the problems start. You should identify with any of these people.
Yeah. I went through that when I watched Mad Men. It was like, oh, I kind of identify with Don Draper, but I really don't want to. I really don't want to. But there are certain parts where it's like, I get where he's coming from with that. Ooh, no, I don't want to do that.
So, yeah. I do sometimes find myself not identifying with, but understanding the points of view of the villains. I'm like, they're making some good points though.
You can commiserate. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get on to the quiz today. It has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. For the first question, we're going to play for a joke. So if you get it wrong, you got to tell me a joke. And if you get it right, I will tell you one, which I'm going to tell you anyway, because I like this week's joke. Here's your question. Lieutenant Colonel William Rankin was a Marine aviator who ejected from his jet aircraft. This is back in 1959. Okay. Why was his ejection so notable? A, he didn't have a parachute. B, he parachuted through a storm cloud and lived. Or C, his body wasn't found until 2022.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah, these are all very plausible. Either he didn't have a parachute, he parachuted through a storm cloud and lived, or he wasn't found until 2 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like, all of those, usually with the first one, I feel like you throw me a really obviously wrong one and I don't feel like there's an obviously wrong one here.
The next question the question three has an obviously wrong one. So,
Okay. I can't wait for that one. I'm going to say, I don't think it's that he didn't have a parachute because maybe that's happened a couple of times. I don't know. It feels like maybe that's a little less notable. Going through the storm cloud seems like it'd be super notable. And not being found until 2020 also feels like it'd be very notable. What was his name?
William Rankin.
Yeah, not that. I don't know why I asked. That doesn't help me at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he was just found in 2020.
The answer, he parachuted through a storm cloud and he lived. So storm cloud is one thing. This is understating it. It was a cumulonimbus cloud. He's only one of two people in history to have gone through fallen through a cumulonimbus cloud and lived to tell about it. So the notable thing here is that from the point where he ejected out of his aircraft, it was an engine failure thing and the backup system didn't work and he had to eject.
Okay.
He ejected at 6 p.m. He landed at 6:40. He was in the air with the parachute for 40 minutes going through that cloud. 65 miles he went in total.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And he lived.
Yeah, he lived. In a clear day, the free fall would be about, I think, something like 90 seconds of free fall. And then from the point, you know, his parachute should have gone automatically at 10,000 feet. And it would have been another like 3 minutes, I think, from there to the ground. So he should have been, you know, from the time of ejection, he should have landed at like 6:05 Right. 6:10 at the latest.
That sounds terrifying.
6:40. Yeah. So lightning, hailstorms, not to mention the fact that he started at 47,000 feet. And so he couldn't breathe. He had an oxygen mask and he couldn't get it onto his face. And he's being pelted by hail. There's thunder. There's lightning. He described the lightning as these sheets of blue light several feet in diameter, like right next to him. And several points he thought he died. Just absolutely crazy story.
That is wild. And for 40 minutes, that sounds 40 terrifying. Minutes.
Yeah, imagine being in a parachute and going up.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
No, absolutely not. I don't want to imagine it.
Yeah. So you got it wrong. Do you have a joke?
Ooh, I didn't have one ready. I can look.
You were confident in that first question.
I was like, you know what? I got this. This is the first question.
I'll tell you no mine problem. While you find one.
Okay.
Four people are on a crashing plane, but there are only three parachutes. So the first person to grab a parachute is Brad Pitt, and he reaches for the door and he says, "My family and my friends, they need me. Surely you will all understand." And he goes. The next person to grab one is Donald Trump. He says, "I'm the most intelligent president this country ever saw, and I'll do great things in the future." And he jumps out. Now, all that's left in the plane is an old man and a little schoolboy. And the old man goes, "Go ahead. You know, you take it. I've lived a long and fulfilled life." And hearing that, the schoolboy answers calmly, "Don't worry, we'll both be okay. Our most intelligent president just took my school backpack." Pretty good.
Okay, that's a good one. That's
pretty good.
Let's see. Okay, I did look up parachute jokes.
Oh, nice. Like, that's what I did too.
See if I can find another parachute joke. Okay, here's one. This is a really short and sweet one.
Okay.
How do you survive a fall without a parachute?
How do you survive? How?
Same way you do any other season.
Oh.
Winter, spring, and summer. Yeah.
Ouch. That's pretty. I get it.
Uh-huh. There's just like a lot of.
Oh, Jesus.
That's a bad one. It's pretty bad. Turns out there's not that many parachute jokes.
No, maybe we should have gone with thunderstorm jokes.
Like a non-parachute joke.
Did you in gym class, did you play with the parachute?
Did you? Yes, that was always the best day in gym class.
And did you know they still do that?
Oh, well, yeah, I got a kid in kindergarten.
And is there gym in kindergarten?
There is
physical gym in education. I didn't remember. I don't remember gym class in kindergarten.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, though, because they don't bring gym clothes or anything. Like they don't, you know, I think it would take longer to try and get all of the kindergartners changed than it would.
Imagine. That is the class at that point.
Right, exactly. So we just kind of, you know, but I don't know, they're kindergartners. So I think they all just wear like we're not putting them in, you know, starch jeans or anything. So I guess they're gym ready clothes. But no, they do have gym in kindergarten, and he'll come home and say that they were doing like push-ups. I'm like, is that healthy for a 5-year-old?
I don't know, honestly.
Don't know.
As long as they're not doing full contact football, they're probably okay.
Well, you know what's weird though is very different than when we would have been in kindergarten. He'll sometimes come home and tell me that they did YouTube videos. Like Danny Go is a big thing. They'll do Danny Go videos
for,
where they'll just
for phys ed or for just in general. I don't know.
Sometimes for phys ed, he'll say, I mean, maybe he's lying, but he'll come home and tell me that they did a Danny Go video.
That'd be a weird thing to lie about. I don't know what Danny Go is.
Okay, Danny Go is a very popular, I think, among kindergartners. It's just a series of, it's this guy, Danny Go, and he has these YouTube videos, and I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. So like he'll be on the screen and he'll have like things, you know, computer generated things coming behind him that you have to like dodge with him.
He'll do
chase videos, or you'll like jump over things, or he'll do freeze dance videos. Yeah. So it is, I mean, you are like doing physical activity, but it's just sort of weird that is his gym class sometimes.
It is. I mean, I'm thinking about like Beat Saber with the quest, you know, like where you're moving, you have to duck sometimes and move stuff around. And
that is what it is. Yeah. It's basically like that. Cause in, you know, I don't know, there was one where there's like a winter one where you throw snowballs and you know do the motions with him, so it is kind of cool. He's got a lot of videos, he's got a big following. I think that's crazy.
I knew nothing about it. Okay, so for question two, we're gonna play for an admission of a guilty pleasure band or artist. Music so guilty
music.
Pleasure
yeah
guilty those, pleasure yeah. Band or artist. Here is your question. Okay. Roughly how many people are forced to eject from their aircraft every year? So we're talking, this is strictly military. I think the only people that eject from aircraft.
Yeah, I've never heard that on the, when I fly in a plane and they do the safety talk. They've never
right,
talked about
yeah.
Aircraft.
So here's your three options. A, okay. Between 10 and 50. B, between 1 and 10. Or C, between 100 and 150.
So A is between 10 and 50.
10 and 50. B is 1 to 10. And C is 100 to 150.
I mean, I hope it's not 100 to 150. That seems like a lot that would have to eject. But I mean, I have zero clue. I have no idea how common it is. It seems, I hope it's not that common, but maybe that just shows how much I don't know about pilots in the military.
I'm going to give you a hint. This is just among the United States Air Force. Okay. So we're eliminating Navy and Marine pilots, which are a smaller portion of the pilots. I mean, most of the pilots are Air Force.
That doesn't help me much because
extra information for you.
Okay, so just Air Force. I hope it's 0 to 10, but that feels like maybe I'm being silly. It's a year. How many a year?
1 year. Yeah.
1 year. I'm gonna say 0 to 10. I hope that's right.
The answer. It's 10 to 50.
10 to 50.
Yeah, this is according to the NIH. What would they know? In the U.S. Air Force, 10 to 15 air crew eject yearly, with a decline since 1991. They said, we conclude that the risk of fatality is between 0 and 11% and major injury is between 2 and 25%. That seems high. Both are remarkably low, decreasing in the later years of the study period. The absolute number of head, neck, and spine injuries is between 0 and 10 yearly, similarly decreasing. So, yeah.
You know, that's what I was thinking of.
Maybe you were thinking about the spine injuries.
The spinal injuries, yeah.
I'll give you half a point. All right, so for the next question. Oh, do you have a guilty pleasure band?
I have so many guilty pleasure bands. I would say currently my guilty pleasure is Olivia Rodrigo. I don't know if you're familiar with her at all.
No, I really enjoy the angstiness.
I love
angstiness
her.
Is the same as angst. Yes, angst is she's like a new Avril Lavigne.
She is kind of, especially her second album, Guts. I love it. I listen to it quite a bit. So I would say that is definitely my current guilty pleasure.
I've never put on Olivia Rodrigo, but every time I've heard her, I'm like, I like how expressive she is.
Yeah, I like it. I dig it. I think she's got a good sound to her.
Love it. Love it. I think one of mine is always B-52s.
Oh, that's good.
I will jam out, but if I'm at a stoplight with the windows down, I'm going to turn it down.
Yeah, or like roll up the window so people don't hear it.
Hey, you see a faded sign at the side of the road? It wasn't a rock. Okay, let's keep on moving. Question three. For this question, we're going to play for a sticker. This is 3 inches and it's square and extremely adhesive on the back. For this question, William Rankin, he's one of two people I had mentioned to ever survive falling through cumulonimbus thundercloud. Which one of these is the other? Okay, again, no one would know any of these. The last 3 weeks, I've made the questions way too difficult. And it's not anything against my guest's intelligence. There's no one, as you're listening, I'm sure that you probably don't know this stuff either without Googling. But here are your options. A German paraglider who was training for the Paragliding World Cup. B, an F-16 pilot flying missions over Afghanistan. Or C, former New York Congressman George Santos.
Well, I sure wish it was C. We're going to say probably not him. Okay, so the first one is a German pilot who was training.
Paraglider. Yeah, this is a paraglider training for the Paragliding World Cup. B is an F-16 pilot flying missions over Afghanistan.
I'm going to take a chance here. I'm going to put the sticker on the line and I'm going to say it's the paraglider who is training for the paragliding Olympics.
I am excited to tell you are correct. It's a German paraglider who is training for the Paragliding World Cup. I thought that if you were going to get that one wrong, it was going to be because you didn't believe there was a paragliding World Cup, but there is.
I you know what? I didn't really believe it, but I decided to just take a chance. I felt like I just had to lay it all on the line for the paragliding World Cup.
Yeah, this actually happened in New South Wales, Australia. So the German paraglider born in Poland is Iwa Wisniewska.
Sure. Famous paragliding.
Iwa Wisniewska. I'm going to say that is the name. And I think that happened. When did this happen? I think it happened long after Rankin. Rankin was the only one who had done it for a long time. 2007. Wait. So yeah, this wasn't that long ago.
There was a paragliding. How often does the paragliding World Cup happen? Is it every year, or is it like soccer?
That's a great question. Organized by each year, the Paragliding World Cup Tour visits 5 to 6 different locations worldwide. Ooh. And the goal of each competition is to fly around a predetermined course with a start, some turn points, and a finish line. It's kind of like, I don't know if you ever played Pilot Wings on Super Nintendo, but that's kind of what I think of, is that there was a paragliding challenge on there where you had to fly to different points before landing.
So, do you think that's where they got the idea for the Paragliding World Cup?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it doesn't say when this started. Oh, wait, maybe it does. 1992. So hang on. We're going to do a little investigating of Pilot Wings.
Let's see which team first.
Oh, it was first released 1991. So take that. They stole the idea from Nintendo.
They did. I think if somebody played that game and was like, you know what, this would be really great in real life. Let's do this IRL.
That's amazing. It can't be true. It had to have existed, but maybe just not the World Cup, right? Maybe there were already competitions.
Yeah, like
happening.
The paragliding games or something. Yeah. Every country had their little paragliding league. And then they were like, we got to do a World Cup, see who's the best.
Yeah. If there's one complaint I've always had is that the world of paragliding is not organized enough. In terms of competition. I was just talking about this earlier today. Like, why isn't paragliding more regimented?
I wish we had a definitive way to say who was the best paraglider in the world. And I, you know, we do.
Question 4, who's your favorite paraglider? No, I'm just kidding. That's not true. Okay. So you're 1 for 3. You've gotten one right. Okay. Here's question 4. And you get a sticker, by the way. We're going to play for an admission of the best thing that has happened to us this week.
Ooh, okay. All right.
I didn't think about this one ahead of time. I don't have one. So I'm going to have to really. I'm counting on you to lose this question. The cumulonimbus cloud. Okay. This is the kind that William Rankin fell through. And you, Wisniewski. It's the only type of cloud capable of what? Okay. So what I'm about to read are specific to cumulonimbus clouds. A.
I feel like I should know this, and I can tell you right now I'm not going to.
What's your background in? What's your?
I'm an accountant.
What did you study in school and stuff?
Economics. Not meteorology.
So why did you say you thought you should know it? I'm just curious.
Well, just because I feel like, you know, don't we learn about clouds in like high school?
Knowing about weather is an important part of being adult that I do not care about. I've never cared about. People are always like, hey, what's the forecast? I'm like, I'm dressed the same every day. It doesn't matter to me. I'm never outside.
Yeah. No, just as like a human that exists in the world. I feel like you're supposed to know about cumulonimbus cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very similar to like reading an analog clock. I'm like, yeah, I know I should do it, but it still takes me 30 seconds, 40 if you're waiting for me.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Did not.
Let's go to the question.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so the cumulonimbus cloud is the only type of cloud capable of what? A, producing hail, thunder, and lightning. B, blocking the sun. Or C, producing rain while the sun is shining, otherwise known as liquid sunshine, a term that my brother made fun of me for using because he thought it was golden showers, which is a completely different term. So A, producing simultaneous hail, thunder, and lightning. B, blocking the sun. Or C, producing rain while the sun is shining.
Okay, I feel like people are probably going to be screaming at me right now.
I don't know how much people know about weather.
Okay, so either simultaneously producing hail, lightning, and thunder.
Yes.
Or blocking the sun.
Yeah.
Or raining while you can see the sun.
That's correct.
Okay. I am going to say, I'm basing this on nothing. I don't know. I'm just going to say simultaneously hail, lightning, and thunder.
You are correct. That is the answer.
Yay. Cool. I mean, I totally knew it. I was just trying to make the listeners feel better by pretending I didn't.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Weather expert over here. So like, this is interesting because I was looking up like interesting facts about cumulonimbus clouds. And what I kind of was interested why it was so strange that only two people have lived falling through one. And I guess I didn't really know what one was. And I looked at it, and this is the, if you Google a picture of a cumulonimbus cloud, you've probably not seen many in your life. This is a giant, big cloud that extends upward with like a big wall.
Like a scary looking cloud?
Yeah, just one like giant storm. And it's strange that it says hail, thunder, and lightning, because it really could just be like hail and lightning, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a, it'd be strange already, to produce thunder without lightning or lightning without thunder. Now, cumulonimbus clouds can block the sun, but so can other storm clouds.
So they can, but it is not specific to cumulus.
Yeah. Cumulonimbus are the only ones that can, where you're going to see like lightning and crazy rain and hail and everything all in the same spot, which is what, when William Rankin landed, he was just covered in welts from baseball size hails. Yeah. Baseball size. Cause he was up, you know, tens of thousands of feet in the air. And, at one point held his breath because of the rain was so thick that he thought he was going to drown. Pretty crazy.
I was gonna become a paraglider or a parachuter, and I think you've talked me out of it. So yeah. Sounds terrible.
Well, you can start your training for the World Cup.
Right.
Yeah. It's not too late. It's not too late. What's the best thing that's happened to me this week? Okay, so I will say this. I'm not allowed to say yet, but there is a really big contract that just came through. When I say big, I mean like momentous. I will be doing something in just over a week that I will remember for the rest of my life. Okay. How's that sound for a tease?
That sounds great. Yeah.
I legally cannot talk about it. I know I hate when people do this. But I did have to answer the question. And so there is something that my agent called and said, like, hey, this is happening. Let's do it. And so I've been filling out paperwork for it all week, and it happens the last week of March. And then I come home from that. I'm home for one day, and then I go on a cruise ship for like 8 more days after that. So God, I wish I could just share it with you. I have shared
it
with
the,
I'll tell you when we're not broadcasting, but yeah, okay. I did share it with the people on Patreon the other day. They're the only people that know, and not many people really see that. So, I can't put it out there publicly yet, but anywho,
that's a good tease.
It's exciting.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, I just got the notice that my free Zoom account, I quit paying for Zoom recently. I've only got 10 minutes left, but we should have plenty of time to get through this last question. So far, you're two for four. You're batting 500. The question five is for all the marbles. So if you get it right, Lisa, you're welcome back on the podcast. If you get it wrong, never again will I ask you.
Okay.
Here's your question. What has been the single scariest weather experience you've ever lived through?
Ooh, that's a good question. What has been the single scariest weather experience I've ever lived through? I mean, I've been pretty lucky. I've never been through like an earthquake or, and you know, it's anything super duper scary. Obviously I've had tornado warnings. Again, I've been very lucky. I would say probably the scariest one was, I mean, this was a long time ago. I went to Girl Scout camp, and we were at like the dining hall, and then this just all of a sudden this massive thunderstorm started, and we had to walk to back to like our bunks. And that was the first time the lightning got like, it got really close to us and was hitting the ground. That was the first time I realized that lightning was colorful when you see it close up, because it was that close. So that, I mean, I know that doesn't sound that scary, but
as a child, I can imagine that is a correct answer. We'll give it to you, and you're invited back on the podcast. I had a couple that came to mind when I wrote this question. One time I was driving with my buddy Mark to a show at Purdue University. We were on I-70 just outside of Indianapolis, and a tornado crossed the highway in front of us, a literal tornado.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, as scary as it sounds, and I do have a video of this early days of like the tiny camcorders that we had.
Wow.
That's how long ago this was. This was probably early 2000s, maybe like 04, 05, something like that. We couldn't see the tornado because the rain was just sheets across the windshield. You know, there's nothing you can do. You have your windshield wipers on full blast and you just can't see anything. But the traffic had stopped. And when the rain cleared, maybe 12 cars in front of us, the power lines were down across the road. And we looked to our side. There's a semi trailer on its side. There was a house down. And so we're like, I have to get to the show. I still had a few hours to drive.
Yeah.
And so I literally turned around and was weaving through the stopped traffic back to the last exit and just drove. And I made the show on time. But it was a crazy. But the scariest, I think, was when I was a little kid like you. And we were playing Pony League. Do they have Pony League everywhere? Or is that just where I grew up? So after Little League, Pony League was like between Little League and high school. So, baseball. Sorry, I should have said that.
Okay.
Between Little League baseball and high school baseball, you had Pony League for like young teenagers. And we were about ready to play a game, and there was a huge storm that came through. And up on the hill and behind us was the adult softball leagues, like where they had two things. And lightning came through, and it was almost, I can remember it in slow motion. That the lightning came through and hit the ground, went back up, hit the ground, went back up, and then struck the pitcher's mound on the softball.
Oh my gosh.
Hit a dude.
Hit a
guy on the pitcher's mound, and everyone was running for cover. I was knocked off my feet, and I was probably 200 yards away. Completely knocked off my feet. I don't know if that was from any sort of actual physical force or just being scared and the sound and everything. Luckily there was a paramedic in the crowd who came out, resuscitated the guy. And he lived for a few years after that. He died from complications from that. Never was quite right. But,
Oh my gosh.
Rode my bike with a friend to the next day back to that pitcher's mound. And we were like, oh, this is where it all happened. You know, and the craziest thing was there were four metal spikes that held the pitcher's plate in place, and they were all pulled up out of the ground, sticking up like 4 inches up out of the plate.
My gosh.
I'm assuming that the lightning did that. Why else would, you know? And then of course all the needle caps and everything from the paramedics were all there too, which was crazy. So that was scary. Yeah, that was as close as I'll ever get to lightning, I think. I don't think I'll ever get closer than that. So thanks for coming on. I'd love to have you on again sometime. You guys can find out all about CBUS Comedy by just Googling it. Look up, it's CBUS Comedy, and you can find out where there are our local comedy shows happening around. Do you have anything else you want to share?
I don't think so. And, no? You know, you can find Stay Pumped, the Vanderpump Rules podcast on, you know, Spotify, you know, Apple Podcasts, or I think anywhere you can get podcasts. And
and you don't have to be a Vanderpump Rules aficionado to listen to this podcast. It's made for people like Lisa's brother who are not into it, and making this interesting and accessible. And thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Of course. I love every time I do the podcast. Thanks for having me.
That is all for this week. Thank you so much to Lisa Berry for being my guest, and thanks to you for listening. Here's the voice of a cumulonimbus thundercloud.
Thank you for listening to The Internet Says It's True. To listen to episodes ad-free and a week early, support us on Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/Michael Kent. If you learned something just now that you didn't already know, go to the Apple Podcast app and leave us a review with 5 stars and a few words. That helps us a ton, because that's how the algorithm works. I don't know what an algorithm is, but just do it! See you next week for a brand new episode of The Internet Says It's True!
The internet says it's true. We'd like to thank the Patreon subscribers whose monthly contributions help to make this show possible. Sean Brown, Joshua Endres, Dallas Ray, Bryce Swanson, Eugene Anderson, Jim and Joanne Martin, Mitch and Andrew Joseph Kemplin, and the show's official Emperor, Kick Track. The show is written and produced by me, Michael Kent. The theme song is by Finite Music Forge, and all audio clips in this episode are used for education and commentary and used under Fair Use Title 17 USC Section 107. You can listen to past episodes by searching for The Internet Says It's True wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see bonus content at patreon.com/Michael Kent.